Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Should gold and silver be a part of your portfolio? Well, we see a lot of ads for it. Is it something you should invest in? What are some of the common investment mistakes that we make, particularly our young people? If you're moving, have you considered the tax ramifications and how you're going to pay for them? And so many other things to talk about, like this market that keeps going up and up and up. Well, my guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial. Joe, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley. It's great to be here.
Now, the stock market. Let's start with talking about the stock market. This always fascinates me. It just seems to keep going up, 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 and yet I don't think our economic, this is my own lay opinion, I don't think that our economy has improved that much over the last 5 or 6 years, and yet the stock market seems to say, well, we're going crazy, wild, wow, let's just keep riding up. What's your take on all this?
Well, we had a really, really bad recession half a decade ago. And usually the recovery from a recession is similar in trajectory in reverse to the drop. So we had a very significant slowdown. But instead of having a very rapid pickup, it's been very slow and plodding. So it gives us probably a longer time
now,
frame.
You're talking about the gross domestic product, indicators of growth. Not the stock market when you say it's been slow, because I don't think the stock market has been slow.
Well, it's been basically trudging upward over the last 5 years.
Okay, so you are talking about the stock market.
But because it's been pretty consistent, it feels like it's shot up.
Ah, okay.
Really the last down period we had was a few years ago when the European bond market was having all kinds of trouble. Mm-hmm. And we've had very few corrections since then. And I think that we're not used to that. We're not used to just straight up for a few years. When it happens, we know it tends to end and not always end well.
Why is this? Well, yeah, see, that I think that's what scares people like me. I keep seeing this market. Where is it going? It just keeps going up and up and up. I mean, I can remember when breaking 10,000 was something extraordinary.
So here's the thing. Earnings are much higher. Business earnings or corporate earnings are much higher than they were 6, 7, 8 years ago. So basically, the market, in a way, overshot on the downside. A lot of businesses were successful in recovering from that, and the market's slowly, steadily catching up with what businesses have done.
Well, all right. Now, suppose I'm a first-time investor, and I've got some money that I've inherited, or I've gotten a big bonus at work, or something like this. Now, I know the first thing I should do is find a certified financial planner so that I know that the person that I'm – and we'll talk about what that means in a minute. But how do I, and I don't have a lot of money, so let's say I want to make an investment. I want to put it somewhere. Should I ride the market? Should I put some of it here and some of it on the market? I mean, how do you get started? Yeah, how do you get started? You know, that's a kind of a big deal. And we have so many young people who are coming into the workplace these days. I know they should start planning for their future and start investing and saving. So how do you start?
Well, that's it. I mean, when you say young, that's a tip right there. Where if somebody is, great. If they're a little bit older, so be it. But we look at time frame right off the bat. When are you going to use the resources that we're talking about, either that you already have or that you're going to be accruing? The longer the time frame you have, the more adjustments you make to be a little more aggressive. And that's a big part of it. And then the other is, are there other specific things that you need to do before retirement that would put a demand on your resources? We need to factor those in. So it gets very specific.
And how much risk? Is that a big factor?
Yeah, how much risk you can sleep with. And sometimes that's hard to tell if you don't have a lot of experience as an investor. So we have to go about that from different angles. But one thing I like to tell clients is that for a long time, I thought about 80% of the factors that dictated how you should invest your money were related to you yourself. These last several years, the world's changed a bit. And I'd say now it's more 50% your own circumstances and 50% sort of the macroeconomic outlook. What's going on out there? What's the Fed doing in the United States? What's the European Central Bank doing? There's a lot of other unusual factors. There's a lot more interference in typical activity than there used to be. So I kind of view it as we went from an 80-20 to a 50-50 ratio.
Wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. It is. And so I talk to clients about that and make sure that they're on board with that notion.
Well, then what does that mean? So we have experience from the world impacting on how we invest and what happens to our markets. So how do you factor that in? I mean, you were talking about what the Fed's doing, but then what is the economy doing in Europe, for example, in Asia?
So those things, those specific things tell us that there are maybe greater perils and greater rewards that are out there than we had seen in times when government debt, frankly, wasn't so much part of the picture and trying to work around it. And with that, we need to adjust the types of techniques that we have used for a long time. So, for instance, I find on occasion that some older investors keep a little bit more in the equity markets than they might have if they were that same age 10, 15, 20 years ago, because interest rates are very, very low, partly because of these external factors. And so where else would they go except in assets that are a little bit less affected by interest rates? So that's an example and a somewhat of a general one, but there are many that are things that we would do that we might not have, again, done 10, 15, 20 years ago. So that's a big part of planning these days is to admit it's actually not just about yourself.
You can't control it all.
You do have to acknowledge that the cards that you're being dealt. Now, a big part of that is with interest rates being so low, massive implications of that. All through the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, when retirees wanted to get a little more conservative, they'd sell off a little stock, buy a little bond, and bonds did great for 30 years. Well, we're at this trough in interest rates, and bonds at points in time are doing pretty well. But are they a 30-year, 20-year buy? Probably not. And so that has implications. What else do you do? So let's just say financial planners have their hands full these days.
Well, I would certainly say, and especially when you're talking about the ratio of influences on the market and on your investment decisions, that is such a huge swing to outside sources affecting us. That is a big one. Well, what is the Fed doing these days?
Continuing to put a safety net under economic growth in the United States.
And when that safety net is gone, what's going to happen to us?
Well, I guess the implication, their thought would be, well, it'll be removed so slowly that we'll never be in too much trouble. But frankly, this is a massive experiment, and the outcome is unknown to all.
We really don't know. Oh, good Lord. That's my money you're talking about, yeah. Joe. I should tell our audience in full disclosure that Joe does happen to be my family's financial advisor. So anyway, but you're not giving me anything for this appearance, Joe. Indeed not. As a matter of fact, on that happy note, let's just take a pause here and let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial, and we're talking about all kinds of things. Joe, what is your website? How can people reach you?
Ameriprise.com, okay. and then my name, / Joseph G. Hemsley.
Okay. Joseph G. H-E-M-S-L-E-Y. Okay. Thank you. Now let's go back and talk about all these factors and, you know, that can keep you up at night. Part of what I'm hearing you say is that your age when you're starting making these investments is a significant factor in terms of what you do with your investment dollars.
Yes, absolutely.
How much risk you can take. Because if you're younger, you can take more risk. You know, if you're a senior, I think you're a little bit more adverse to risk than you would be if you're out there earning an income. So the balance, as you said, the tricky part of this is the balancing act.
Yeah, and one of the challenges is that seniors may not be so senior. In other words, medical science is keeping us alive and will be longer and longer. So there's kind of a growing interest. I'll give you a specific example. Folks that when they turn 70, if they have an IRA, you know, in their 70s, they're supposed to start taking money out of it if they haven't already. But there's a lot of people that are in a fortunate situation where they don't quite need it yet. You know, many people aren't in that situation, but many are. And there's enough of them saying, look, why are you making us take the money out when I might live to be 100 years old and I might need it in my 90s? So there's implications of medical science, frankly, keeping us alive longer. So that plays into it, too. A 70-year-old today might not be as conservative or cautious as they were 30 years ago with regard to the investment decisions that they should be making.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. Yes, because we're going to be living longer, and that certainly does make a difference. Well, in terms of investments, I'd like to talk about some of the segments that you would invest in, you know, foreign investments, energy, you know, green energy, all of those things. Do you put those into those are factored in, I'm sure, when you're making recommendations to people. What are some of the areas that you see as growth areas for an investment person? I mean, would I want to put my money in green energy or oil or technology? Or how do you put a balance into that?
Well, that's exactly how we do it. We have a balance because some of these trends don't always perpetuate. So, and we don't always know when they're going to pivot. So at any given time, we may have preferences and go forward with those preferences. And energy is a big deal these days. I mean, the energy markets are changing rapidly. What's going on in the United States with energy is creating huge investment opportunities. Natural gas has been fascinating, how much less expensive natural gas is to American consumers than it is to European consumers, mm-hmm. for example.
Because of availability to
We've got it, and so forth. So that's a big part of the process that one would need to have, is to decide at what level do they start making those sector decisions about energy versus technology versus retail. You know, are they going to try to do it themselves, or are they going to have their financial planner do it? Is their financial planner going to say, hey, I'm meeting with clients all the time, I'm not necessarily going to be picking industries, I'll pick money managers to be the players on the team, and I, the planner, will be the coach of that team. And frankly, I use that model quite a bit in my office.
Well, you're getting a lot more knowledge input to the pool than if you just have one person.
And what to wait in any particular mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. You know, what looks good. Because sometimes an investment theme may sound really good, but you're a little late to the party. Where the like technology, when the technology bubble burst, I mean, there were people buying into that, you know, up until the last minute, because the thought was, well, technology is the future. Well, it was, but at what price do you pay for those profits or lack thereof in that at that time period?
It's challenging. Does it keep you up at night, Joe? My goodness.
A little bit. Sometimes. A little worry is not a bad thing. A little
no,
worry keeps
of course
us
not.
Honest.
We should never be totally complacent. I believe that. That's exactly right. Okay, let's talk about what I mentioned in the intro, gold and silver. We're seeing so many ads for gold and silver these days. How do you look at investments in gold and silver, and do you do that for your clients?
Well, I in a way, yes. Firstly, if a client specifically asks and says they have a preference for it, then we'd look at the situation, and I'd determine to what degree to play devil's advocate or not with regard to their specific request that we have that in the portfolio. But otherwise, I view precious metals as part of the commodities piece of a client's portfolio. So the broader decision is how much to have in commodities. And that could entail energy exposure and agricultural exposure in addition to metals. And not just precious metals like gold and silver, but non-precious metals that are actually used for manufacturing and so forth. So what that's been tied to a lot the last few years is speculation about, is China's growth pattern sustainable? And then some of the other countries that feed off of China. That's had a big impact on the prices of commodities. So over a recent period, commodities have fallen a lot in value after having been in a bull market for a long time. Mm-hmm. So the big debate right now is, are we going to continue to be in a commodities bull market? Well, that's something I think every investor should consider them. Now, to isolate gold and silver, sometimes we're not always investing in those when we go to them. We're basically storing capital in them on the presumption they'll hold up well if times get tough. And what we've seen is that works sometimes and it doesn't work sometimes. In the latter half of 2008, when our economy was really falling apart, there's a lot of trouble in the financial sector. Gold actually fell a couple of times in that scary period because hedge funds that owned it and others needed capital. So they sold off their gold to raise capital. So it doesn't always behave as a safety net if you will, or a store, a safe haven. And that's often the draw to it. And certainly those commercials, that's the implication, you know, that's been around forever and it always will be. And, and so bedrock, why not go for it? But it's a market and it's very volatile.
So you have to consider that when you're looking at the approach. Well, are there other precious metals that are being sold besides gold and silver? I mean, I'm sure there are other things on the market.
Yeah, but I think when we think in terms of places to go in a safe haven desire, those really, when it comes to metals, those are the two that dominate that desire, that aspect.
I mean, you hear so much about copper and copper being, you know, well, now, thieves stealing copper wires from the phone companies.
Well, now we get into more readily economic issues where, you know, you get aluminum and tin and copper and things that are actually used for manufacturing. That's more purely an investment decision.
I see.
And to what degree? And then you can own those things directly, or you can own the manufacturers or the distributors of those.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, time is flying by here. Let's take a brief pause and let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial. Okay. So the stock market, I shouldn't be too scared of it. It just keeps going up. I just love it. What can I say, Joe? It's wonderful. What are some of the other things that you would advise first-time investors? And you know, I had said earlier, what are some of the common mistakes? We were talking before we went on the air, and you had said procrastination.
Yeah.
Biggie, right?
Yeah, that's the main one.
You can make some mistakes,
but if you get started earlier, you're going to make more good decisions than bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So net, if you just pay more attention to your personal finances sooner in life, and from what I've seen, that bodes very well.
Yeah. So start early, plan ahead, get someone you trust to help you make investments. All right. I want to ask you something. I've been reading recently that there may be an increase of ethanol content in alcohol, in gasoline, up to 15%, which I think now it's commonly 10%. Well, I've heard over the years that the ethanol has caused tremendous rise in corn prices, food prices, etc. And I would think that this would be another rise in those prices. How's that going to affect the stock market? How's that going to affect investment strategies?
Well, if it plays out, then some of the things we've seen in the past happen may occur again, where if corn prices go up, then it costs more to feed livestock and so forth, and food prices go up. But it's all part of the energy dynamic, and that's changing rapidly. So my supposition that if it were playing out similar to in the past, you'd get similar results, may it not actually be the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a changing energy composition in the United States, and it's changing rapidly. So I think, frankly, it's hard to draw conclusions as to
what's going to happen.
Yes.
I guess the only thing you can do is just look back and see what's happened in the past and think, well, that's entirely possible that would occur again.
Yeah, we would start from there, but then we'd also say, okay, what is happening
what
now
else?
That's different?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at what's going on in the Dakotas, where you know unemployment is almost non-existent and growth is rapid. There's energy there that's being. I have a few clients that happen to be from that part of the country originally, and it's funny. It's not uncommon if you were from that area and you were fortunate enough to have the means, you bought a little land, and that little land is now stuff that's being drilled on.
Lots of money there.
There's royalty checks showing up where families never assumed that would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an example
it's a boon
that it's
for consumers.
Mm-hmm. That the ethanol challenge may be offset somewhat by some other positive.
Some of the
things.
Other things that are developing. I just read recently that someone was forecasting that in the year I forget 20 something, China's going to be the leading world economy. What do you think of that?
Well, I think based on the trajectory of growth, if things continued on, that would be almost inevitable.
Well, what does that mean in terms of investments? And I think they were looking at something like 2060, or I can't remember. It was way out into the future. But what does that have to do with investment strategy now? Does it make a big difference?
No, I think a declaration that at some point their gross domestic product, you know, decades from now would be larger than ours, is just it's a theme.
Right.
But then we have to render it much more immediate and say, you know, how would we go about investing in that type of growth today? Mm-hmm. Well, frankly, it's the big debate. I mean, there are many smart minds that think that China is not growing in a healthy way, and it's not sustainable. Now, it's a huge place, so there can be pockets where they could sustain it, and then geographic pockets where it's mostly overbuilt, or particular industry sectors where other countries will be better at competing with them over time.
Right. On the other side of that, I have read articles that say that they're not performing up to expectations, and there's some stagnation in their markets. So, that sounds so smart. Wow.
Well, you need
big
to
words.
Always give yourself more credit. there are parts of the Chinese economy that at any given moment, frankly, look rather appealing to invest in.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. Macau has been growing very rapidly. So for years, casino stocks in Macau look pretty good. You know, lately, not so much. So it's a cycle. Now, so then you say, well, there's still growth going on in China in different areas. So what has been underinvested in, if anything, over there? But you just don't necessarily want to throw a blanket over the whole place and say, let's own everything.
Right. No. I mean, there again, that's where you come out with balance in what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and this brings us to a broader topic of should U.S. investors have monies overseas? Because frankly, over the last year or so, the U.S. market's done rather well compared to most of the other major markets of the world. So, and the dollar seems to continue to be staying strong. And it seems like we're closer to raising interest rates than Europe is. It seems like we could actually be raising interest rates fairly soon while Europe is still dropping them. Well, that's only going to increase the value of the dollar even more, if depending on some other things that might happen. But let's assume that does. That's going to make it harder for us to sell stuff overseas and easier for Europe to sell stuff overseas. So all of a sudden, investing in Europe, you know, at some point, if the euro weakens, may actually look like a good diversifier. So just using currency as an example, I try to encourage my clients to always have some aspects of their portfolio overseas and some of it not denominated in U.S. dollars. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always mean that they're making more money that way, but it does mean that they're probably getting a smoother ride over time.
Right. It protects you against the severe ups and downs
of one particular part of the world.
If you were to invest in one segment of the investment market, what would it be?
Oh, that's a great question and always a tough one. I really keep thinking about this energy theme that's going on right now. And clearly it seems like if you look back over time, science and technology are always, you know, great long-term places to invest. At a point in time, certain parts of those might be overvalued, but longer term, it's hard to go too wrong if you're doing it smartly.
Well, we keep consuming energy, so let's face it.
But energy is a fascinating place right now. Now money's been chasing into a lot of areas. But I was just in a meeting a couple of days ago with a firm that's pointing out there's certain areas in energy that really are underinvested in still.
Okay, so and that's a good one. That's a final happy note to close
sure,
on, Joe.
Sure.
Thank you so much. For our listeners, you have been tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial, and he's given us some great investment advice. Well, actually, thinking advice, not advice by a stock, but looking at an approach, I think, Joe, which is very, very valuable. But you've been tuned into Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us, and you can reach me at shirley@callforaction.org.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.